Good morning, everyone. We have some distinguished guests with us this morning from the legislature and from the cabinet, and many guests who have traveled from afar to be with us. We are not going to make opening statements because our schedule is so tight this morning and into the afternoon. But we want you to know that this is a work in progress. We have read the testimony that you have submitted ahead of time, and we intend to have a number of stakeholder meetings following today's hearings. So please don't be offended if we don't ask a lot of questions. We want to hear from you, and then we are going to schedule several meetings where you will be asked to meet with our staff to discuss the several issues that are raised in your testimony and in the legislation. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to Judge Salapa to conduct the meeting. Judge?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. This is the time and the place that the Pennsylvania Public Utility Commission has set aside for an on-bank hearing on alternative energy resources, energy conservation and efficiency, and demand-side response. This hearing is a continuation of the investigation at M00061984, which was reopened in September 2006 and resulted in a working group report in June 2007. The Commission has assigned me to manage this hearing, and I have a few ground rules that we will go over. First, if you have a cell phone, pager, or electronic device of any kind that makes noise, please turn it off so that we don't disrupt the speakers. Second, if you have need to carry on conversations, please do so outside the hearing room in order to not disrupt the speakers. Written testimony is available on the Commission's website. If you go to the website and click on the tab that says electricity, then issues, and then demand side response, all of the testimony is there. The reply comments for this proceeding are to be submitted no later than December 1st, 2008. The housekeeping items, I would request that the panelists please sit at the table where your name tag is so that the court reporter, myself, and the commissioners can more easily identify you. Panelists later in the day should be prepared to take their seats when the tables are changed over for a new panel. Hopefully that will speed the process along a little bit. Please observe the time limits. In order to enforce that, I have a light box, and what will happen is that when the green light is on, you're good to speak. When the yellow light starts flashing, you have approximately 30 minutes or 30 seconds to sum up, and not 30 minutes. And then when the red light goes on, you should wrap up. Please use the microphones. This hearing room does not have very good acoustics, and if you don't use the microphone, it's not going to get picked up very well. Please do not discuss pending cases before the commission. Finally, if you're using a PowerPoint presentation, please identify the content and number of the slides that you're referring to during your presentation. That concludes the housekeeping items, and I believe we will move on to panel number one, and we will hear first from Representative George.
Thank you very much, Chairman Collins, Chairman Christie, Honorable Commissioner
of the Public Utility Commission. Thank you for allowing me to testify today on what I believe is the most critical problem that Pennsylvania faces over the next 2 years, the cost of electricity. I think it is fair to say that I've been an outspoken critic of deregulation since it went into effect December 1996. I was one of the few votes against it, and I believe I was right. The Electric Generation Customer Choice and Competition Act has been a disaster. Deregulation promoters not only missiled the public, they missiled themselves. As chairman of the House Environmental Resources and Energy Committee, I've conducted a series of hearings throughout the state. The purpose of these hearings has been to solicit testimony on proactive policies that will protect Pennsylvania from electric price volatility and prevent soaring rate hikes before they occur, not after. On October 8th, the legislature passed Energy Conservation Legislation Act 129 of 2008. That was House Bill 2200. It is a mixed bag on energy conservation, perhaps inching conservation goals forward, but still catering to a utility industry already doing well at taxpayers' expense. Unfortunately, this legislation did not address rate mitigation. Utilities were warned that failing to address rate mitigation now will have repercussions later, and the policies of this issue is on the side of the consumer. Act 129 bolsters requirements for utilities to reduce overall and peak demand output. However, the bulk of power to be obtained through the broken PJM wholesale market will continue to be purchased using the most expensive bid submitted on the spot market, giving electric distribution companies sole discretion of long-term contracts is a bad deal for citizens, industry, and the Commonwealth. If time had permitted, this bill should have been repaired and returned to the Senate. Consumers were being victimized by ravenous utilities and ice flow environmentalists who say outrageous electric rates with no basis in the true costs of producing power are okay as long as it reduces demand. The conservation benefits in House Bill 2200 will be trumpeted as a salvation, but ratepayers need to be heard on the rate increases, or we will be risking economic extinction. I believe that the near-term solution is a fair and realistic mitigation of anticipated rate increases. Electric consumers are facing rate increases of between 20 and 60% once the caps come off, and that is unacceptable. I will not stand by while the utilities pursue record-breaking profits on the backs of our families and our businesses. I have urged the legislators to make rate mitigation a top priority when it returns, so that we can avoid the crushing blow to our economy and to our rate cap extension that will be on the anvil on which mitigation is forged. Consequently, it is my intent to reintroduce special session House Bill 54 early next session. If you believe that the language can be improved, I am open to your suggestions. As important as energy and energy conservation is, it is time we take a long, hard look at what utility deregulation has done and will do to our Commonwealth and to our constituents. This is not a Republican or Democrat issue. It is a Pennsylvania issue. I dare say that we will all be on the same side on January 2010 when the rate caps come off the PP&L service area, and on January 2011 when caps come off in the other services. If there are any questions, I stand ready to attempt to answer your questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Representative George. Vice Chairman Christie.
Thank you. I just have a brief comment here. Representative George, it's a real honor to have you here today, and I commend you for your leadership and your courage on having these hearings this past year to address the issues associated with the rate caps coming off. Because as you say, this is not an R issue, this is not a D issue, this is a Pennsylvania issue, and the debate is a very important debate to have in this state, and I appreciate your leadership on those issues. I think we got a good bill here in HB 2200. It's a start. Finally, conservation demand response is in place. But as you point out in your testimony, we have a lot more work to do, and I hope that you stay healthy and you stay active here and help us all out. That's all I have to say today.
Commissioner Pallison?
I thank you for your confidence. House Bill 2200, you know, was my legislation, and I don't feel great that it was passed and that it was passed before it done the job that we all intended to do. But thank the commissioners for your patience and for your continued service to the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Thank you.
Good morning, Representative George, and I also want to commend you on your leadership. Often we forget to thank those who implement the policies in which really grow our statewide economy. So things like AEPS, Act 129 are critically important, and Secretary Hanger and I just kind of had a great conversation offline about where the Pennsylvania economy is growing with renewable energy sources. So I want to commend you and your leadership team and look forward to an open dialogue with you on these issues, especially with rate mitigation. So thank you for being here today.
Thank you, sir.
Commissioner Pittson-Grilley.
I would just echo the comments that you've heard, and thank you for taking the time to be here today and presenting your testimony.
Thank you.
Commissioner Gardner.
Commissioners would forgive me. I have another engagement. It'd be proper. Would you allow me to leave at this time?
You may certainly go, and it's been a privilege to have the prime sponsor of the bill here with us this morning. We look forward to the legislature's guidance in the coming session on rate mitigation. And on a personal note, I want to say that you and I have talked many times over the years on various public utility issues. And I used to think that your constituents had more trouble with public utilities than any other legislator until I thought about it and really discovered it isn't the fact that your constituents have more problems, that it's just that you take more of a personal interest in them. So keep calling and we'll continue to try to solve your constituents' problems. Thank you for coming over this morning.
Thank you all very much.
Next, we will turn to Acting Secretary Hanger.
Good morning, Judge, and members of the Commission. It's not on? Okay. All right. Good morning, Judge and members of the Commission. I appreciate the opportunity to testify, and I too want to thank Chairman George for his work on House Bill 2200, Act 129, and many other important pieces of energy legislation. Without his involvement as chair of the House Committee of Principal Jurisdiction on many of these matters, the considerable progress that has been made over a number of years would not have occurred. So again, I too want to thank the chairman. Governor Rendell has made a priority of his administration moving Pennsylvania forward on energy. And what we're talking about today is a key part of that agenda. But before I get to some specific remarks about Act 129, I did want to put this discussion in a slightly broader context. The governor, with the help of the General Assembly, and this has been done on a bipartisan basis, has had the privilege of signing into law the Alternative Energy Portfolio Standard in November of 2004. He has also signed into law in July the fund that established $650 million to support alternative energy projects. He has also signed into law Act 70, which is a bill requiring the department, with the assistance of an advisory committee, to write a report to the General Assembly on global warming emissions in Pennsylvania and what sensible ways we can address those. He has signed into law two landmark biofuel bills, one focusing on biodiesel and another focusing on cellulosic ethanol. And of course, he has been campaigning hard and was delighted to have this bill that is the subject of the hearing passed in October. It is really a remarkable string of public policy initiatives, and I think it's fair to say that these public policy initiatives have given Pennsylvania an opportunity to be 30 years from now the national leader and indeed an international center for alternative energy and energy conservation. So what we're talking about today is much more than what happens in next year or in 2010 or 2011 even, as important as the short run and the medium term is. I believe what you're deciding today, it will determine whether Pennsylvania is an alternative energy leader within the international community and, of course, within the 50 states. So the opportunity here is big. This isn't really a problem. This is an opportunity. Now, in terms of the House Bill 2200 or Act 129, I think what the legislature and the governor have understood is that we must address our future energy needs by both focusing on the supply side and the demand side. Many of the bills that I just listed really deal with supply side changes. Here we have, for the first time, a major bill that addresses the demand side of the electricity market. And I think we've all come to understand the power of conservation. The power of conservation in terms of the market price, and there's obvious concern about energy prices, but the power of conservation is probably our single best way of disciplining market price. The oil markets are a real example of this. $147 in July, and yesterday the market was at about $54 for a barrel of oil. That has happened in a very short period of time. That's happened with really no additional production on the supply side. It has happened because of a decline in demand. And it's been roughly between 5 and 10%. So there is another important lesson. In order to discipline price in many of these markets, you do not have to cut demand by 50%. You do not have to cut demand by 25%. In tight markets, relatively small reductions in demand, total demand and peak demand, can produce dramatic reductions in price. It also, the power of conservation is immense on the environmental side. It is the cleanest fuel. It's probably the only clean fuel that we have. The solar, wind, and some of the others are very clean, but there's nothing as clean as conservation, and there's nothing as protective of the public health and our environment as conservation. Now, this bill has, I think, a few very important factors, and I do not have time to go through all of them, and I want to make myself available to questions, but I do want to highlight a couple things. First, it does require a cutting of peak demand. And I believe this is actually one of the key provisions in the legislation. And it does require the installation of smart meters in no longer than 15-year period. The department urges the commission, working with the utilities, to install smart meters in every property within 10 years. That's allowed by this legislation, and we believe that if we're going to be serious about positioning Pennsylvania as an international leader, we need to have an upgrade of the grid technology to move essentially from a stupid grid to a smart grid. You can't do that without smart meter deployment, and we shouldn't take 15 years when that could be reasonably done in a 10-year period. I want to also congratulate PPL, who actually did this in 2004. They did it at a time that their rates were capped. They did it because this meter technology actually reduces total operating costs. And now I'm here to ask PPL, with the encouragement of the Commission, to move forward with the full capability of those smart meters. We would urge that PPL offer all of their customers the three pricing plans in House Bill 2200 or Act 129. Those pricing plans are the traditional single price, average price pricing plan, plus a time of use price and a real-time price where the price would change every hour of the day. We believe PPL could be the first utility in the state to offer all customers those pricing plans and implement the full requirements of Act 129, and we urge the Commission to work with PPL to make that possible. In terms of the conservation programs, there is obviously a lot of important detail, and I'm going to focus on one, which is the goals and what those goals mean. Before I get into the specifics of the goals and what the department believes the language means, I do want us to understand that the House Bill 2200 or Act 129 has a requirement that effectively will create large electricity conservation programs in every utility to service territory as defined in the Act. This will be a real departure for Pennsylvania. You have administered with the utilities great conservation programs for low-income customers. Now we go beyond the low-income sector. This bill, implemented fully and properly, will make Pennsylvania a leader on electricity conservation. We should be a top five state. For some, the targets in here may sound small, but achieving these targets will require significant and large programs, and indeed, very few states have achieved these requirements or have programs as large as this. A few have, so it's possible. We can do this, but we will become a leader. So what does that language mean? In my version of the Act, and there's different printers' versions, it's on page 55 of the Act, and I'm not going to read the language, and I believe Chairman Cawley wants to have a dialogue about it. So I will sort of use a quick example about what I believe these goals require. The Act says that 1% must be reduced by May 31st, 2011 in terms of total annual consumption, and 3% of total annual consumption by May 31st, 2013. 1% of what? Well, the Act says it's 1% of the load estimated or projected to occur between June 1st, 2009 to May 31st, 2010. So to put this in a simple case, I think it's the responsibility of the Commission to, in each case, project what a utility's total annual load is likely to be or will be in that period of time, June 1, 2009 to May 31st, 2010, taking into account weather and extraordinary load as you make that judgment. You'll come up with an answer. You'll say, and obviously I'm oversimplifying here, in the case of a particular service territory, that the load is 1,000 kilowatt hours, the total demand. Well, in that example, if you conclude, based on the evidence, and you make your best judgment, that it's 1,000 kilowatt hours in that year, then 1% of that 1,000 kilowatt hours must be conserved as a result of these programs. That's very important, as a result of these programs. In that example, it would be 10 kilowatt hours. The reduction must result directly from these programs. It cannot result from a decline in sales due to market forces or the economy or anything else. It must be attributed to the programs that you establish, you fund. So you must create a program in each service territory that would achieve that goal. And obviously the program design must be sufficient so that you have confidence that the goals will be met. In terms of the program design, we have two basic principles that we urge the Commission to implement when establishing programs big enough to achieve those goals. The first is that we would encourage basically what we call a whole building principle. Going to many, many properties and doing one thing is a less efficient way of using this money than going to a well-selected group of properties and while they're doing many things. That's the basic principle of whole building design, the whole building principle. You have to send a crew, there's transaction costs. When you get to a property, we don't want to just change one or two light bulbs. You want to, in fact, be concentrating your investment in those properties. So that's the first principle. And then the second principle is select well the properties that one goes to. And this is nothing really that new for the Commission. I know in the Low Income Usage Reduction Program, you've had various ways of selecting what customers should receive the services. Here, I think the utilities and others should be focusing on those customers that are using, frankly, a lot of electricity. Now, I don't think that's the only targeting principle or selection principle, but I think that has to be part of what you take into account when deciding where the biggest bang for the investment buck can be had. Now, I need to end before opening myself up to questions by pointing out one of the provisions of the Act that was controversial and did require compromise, and the governor, in fact, accepted this compromise. But we do want to highlight that it was a compromise, and what perhaps lurks behind this compromise as a potential problem that we are counting on the Commission to oversee and police. These programs are going to be operated by utilities. They, of course, in this state, have a rate-setting process that gives them a substantial financial disincentive to conserve electricity. There is, to put it simply, basically, a business conflict of interest here. The utilities are not helping their bottom line when they conserve electricity. Some of the utilities wanted to have these programs, and that's what the bill, in fact, allows. There are protections in the Act that are important. The first one is a very substantial fine if the 1% goal is not met. We're counting on the Commission to take that provision very, very seriously. The fine was increased during this legislative process. It was started out at $5 million and it ended up at $20 million. The second thing that is in the Act that's very important is if the utilities don't achieve the goal, then the programs are removed from the utility administration. And it's up to the Commission then to find an independent entity to administer the programs. So we're hopeful that the utilities will in fact meet these goals that will be established in the manner that we've talked about. But in the event that they don't meet them, then there needs to be serious policing by this Commission and then moving the programs to independent entities. With that, I'll make myself available to you for any questions or discussion you would like to have.
Thank you, Secretary Hanger. Vice Chairman Christie.
Thank you. Secretary, I want to thank you for all your efforts in helping make this conservation demand-side response program a reality. You would think it would have been something that would have been simple to implement, but it took a little bit of time, but we all got it done, and you're to be commended for that. Thank you. One question I have for you is we have the $650 million to be used towards alternative energy projects. Should the projects that result in savings be allowed to be used by the utility to meet their goals of this particular program?
Our answer to that would be no. Those are separate pieces of legislation. You need to size a program and fund it through the provision in this act. Other activity outside of these programs, whether it's funded by the state or by some foundation or by the federal government, LIARC, or whatever else, doesn't count towards achieving these goals. This is a requirement that's within the four corners of the Act. It's a reasonable requirement. It's one that's been negotiated and understood, I think, in the ways that I expressed the goal. We need to treat that with integrity. I know there's some interpretations that would require much bigger programs than the one that I've offered, and I appreciate the intentions behind that interpretation. The department has taken this position because we believe that's what the parties agreed to in the discussion. We think it's a reasonable goal, but we really want it achieved, and we want it fairly achieved through the four corners of the Act and these programs, and not extraneous or external factors, whether it's the economy declining, whether it's other money made available in other places. We want it done through this program and this act.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Pallison.
Morning, Secretary Hanger. Welcome back. Appreciate your views here today. We had talked offline kind of about this renaissance taking place in the Pennsylvania marketplace with renewable energy build-out. And you hit on some things in your testimony, things that we've done, the foundation that we've laid with the passage of the Competition Act, passage of the AEPS requirements, the $650 million outlay for alternative energy projects, coupled now with Act 129. How do you benchmark us against other states, and in your view, what are some of the missing pieces for us going into the next 5 years?
Well, in terms of the public policy that's been established here, I think we have the best collection of public policy, with the possible exception of one or two other states, to position Pennsylvania as that international leader. We have an extraordinary public policy foundation. Now, having good words on the page is only part of the game. What is needed is obviously good implementation of the words on the page, and the Commission and the Department have important roles in implementing these acts, as well as the Commonwealth Financing Authority and other parts of state government have important roles in implementing various parts of this act. And that's now the challenge. We've passed a really incredible mix of laws here that uses competition wisely, that has incentives and subsidies. It's a mix of the left and the right. It's not particularly somebody on the right who's very ideological would look at this and say they don't like it. Somebody on the left who's very ideological would look at this mix and say they don't like it. I think it makes a great deal of sense. The challenge now is implementing it. Now, I think one of the real gaps that is not in the law, but is still a gap in the infrastructure, is the grid, and particularly what I'll call the lack of smarts in the grid. We need to pay attention to upgrading the communication and smarts or intelligence of the grid. That needs to be a critical factor in making our infrastructure more efficient. We size the system, as you well know, to keep the lights on at the moment of highest single demand, and we have a reserve margin built on top of it. And many hours of the year, this grid is and this system is actually underutilized. I mean, it's not stressed. Probably it's not stressed while we're meeting here. It's a little cold outside, but it's probably not particularly stressed to meet the loads right now. And we have to, with the pricing plans, with the smart meters, get more usage out of our investment dollar. And the key to that is really smoothing out some of these peaks to some extent. There's always going to be peaks. There's always going to be hours of the day and days of the year when more electricity is used. But they don't have to be as sharp or high as a peak as they have been historically if we get the grid smarter. And there's huge economic savings there for consumers, for our economy. And by the way, there's huge business opportunity to provide those services for everybody, including, I hope, the utilities. I hope the utilities start seeing the demand side of the market not as a threat to their bottom line, but as a way of increasing their bottom line.
Thank you very much.
Commissioner Pittson-Grilley.
Thank you. Welcome back, Secretary Hanger. On page 3 of your testimony, you talk about a lot of the great programs that are out there and available between the Energy Star Homes programs, the Low Income Usage Reduction Program, the Weatherization Assistance Program, the Housing Finance Agency's Renovate and Repair Program, some of our Sustainable Energy Fund programs, Keystone Health Program. What role do you think the Commonwealth should play in better coordinating what programs are available out there so that consumers, whether they're business or residential, are pointed in the right direction and know what kind of programs are there and funding mechanisms and rebates are available? I think that's one of the frustrations. There's a lot of great programs out there, but how do we steer consumers in the right direction?
So you put your finger on a real important issue. It's one that Policy Secretary Donna Cooper with the Deputy Chief of Staff Roy Kinnitz is working hard on, actually, within the governor's office. There needs to be, in the short run at least, as much information made available to customers about the various programs that are available. In the longer run, which I'll define over the next, as being over the next 2 years, I think we all need to step back and see if we can, in fact, bring these programs into a more sensible arrangement. Can we in fact consolidate some of these programs? Can we make sure that they are tied together more usefully, more sensibly, so that we get as much value from the dollars that are going into these programs as possible? And I know I'm not really prepared today to give you some details on that, but again, Policy Secretary Donna Cooper and Deputy Chief of Staff Roy Kinnitz is working with the department looking exactly at that. And over the next 2 years, I hope we can provide a better answer than simply say right now. I think the answer is to have the programs talking with each other and then making sure that there's good information made available to consumers about where the existing programs are, what the application requirements are, what the eligibility requirements are. And that's, I think, where we're at in the short run. That's not a good enough answer for the medium term or long term.
Well, that's good to hear, and I would hope that the PUC could be included in some of those discussions, because I think we could be helpful with our...
Absolutely, and I'm glad you said that. Let me just say conversations at a preliminary stage, and I don't think we have anything sensible even to share with anybody to get feedback on. So when we have something a little more sensible to get some feedback in, we'll be over here. I personally will be over here to solicit your input and conversation about it, because you have direct responsibility, at least over the LIHEAP programs. So you're obviously a key part of that.
Thank you.
Commissioner Gardner.
Good morning, Mr. Secretary. On behalf of this commission, I want to applaud your leadership, both as a private citizen and now as the DEP acting secretary. You are noted for your dedication to conservation and energy efficiency, and so we welcome that dialogue, and I look forward personally to working with you in that regard. The only thing that I'd like to say in this regard is this hearing today was scheduled in advance of the passing of House Bill 2200 and Act 129. And it's because this commission also understands the value of conservation. And I will assure you that we will work hard to get programs that are will be effective, and we will provide the oversight over the utilities that it requires. Thank you.
Yeah, let me just say I'm very impressed by every member of this commission. That's probably an easy thing for me to say, but it's very genuine. I'm really impressed by the collection of expertise here and your commitment to working on these issues. I think this is a commission that does understand the opportunity and has the skills and the dedication to seize it.
Chairman Cawley.
Secretary, thank you for pointing out the importance of setting the baseline accurately in order to judge whether the 1% and 3% and 4.5% guidelines in the bill, actually mandates in the bill, are met. I note that consumer advocate Popowski has suggested that we retain professional experts on demand response and other experts as needed in order for us to set that baseline accurately, particularly because we only have until mid-January of next year in order to set the rules that the utilities must meet when they file their plans next July. But we have already met with a number of legislative staff who were involved in the drafting of this legislation and various amendments. We've heard from the prime sponsor of the bill, and we certainly welcome your input because we know you were intimately involved in the negotiations in the final stages of this legislation. The legislature has made it clear that it wants this commission to work more closely with the Department of Environmental Protection, as well as the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources. But your input on this bill is particularly important, and we look forward to working with you to get it done properly, because the people of Pennsylvania will not be happy if we fumble this rare opportunity to achieve energy conservation in Pennsylvania. So thank you for being here this morning.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you. It is a rare opportunity. The legislature has worked hard on reaching a compromise. It's a good compromise. And the achieving the 1% in the manner that I stated will be a significant success. Achieving the 3% and then achieving the 4.5% will fundamentally change Pennsylvania for the better. It will protect our economy. It will create thousands of jobs in doing that. It will mean more affordable, more reasonable priced electricity than would be the case if we don't achieve those goals. Again, you know, just think about 4.5% on peak. Think about how much oil has gone down. It's gone down between 5 and 10%. See what happened in the oil market when you had that kind of reduction. This is a significant piece of legislation. The legislature, the Senate and the House should be commended for what they've been able to do with the governor and his administration. My one last point to you, Mr. Chairman, is I think when you quantify what the 1% means, looking at that year, the 2009 to 2010 year, quantify what the 3% means, quantify what the 4.5% means, it's important to have in place good verification so that you can make a judgment about whether the goal was achieved or not. So you need to build into the program design a way of verifying what the programs actually achieved and what they didn't achieve. I think with good verification, then the incentives are even clearer to get this job done. Thank you.
Thank you, Secretary Hanger. Next, we will have representatives from panel number 2, the electric utilities, and we will start with Mr. Frank Jaruska on behalf of PECO Energy Company. Mr. Jaruska.
Thank you, Judge, and member of the commission.
Excuse me, one second. We need to change tape. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. I want to talk to you a little bit today about a couple of specific requirements of Act 129. Under the Act, aggressive targets have been set for both consumption reduction and peak load reduction. At PECO, the consumption reduction alone equates to approximately 1.2 billion kilowatt hours by 2013. That's the equivalent of removing the electric consumption of about 120,000 homes from our service territory. While we filed more extensive testimony and comments, I do want to focus my comments today in three areas. One, determination of the consumption and peak load reduction targets. Two, the measurement and verification. And three, the definition of a conservation service provider. The consumption targets could truly be looked at in two ways. One, as a reduced by target, or the other would be to a not to exceed ceiling. PECO firmly believes that the target interpretation should be a reduced by, as John Hanger had described. We would propose that kilowatt hour targets be set for each utility, and a utility would be judged against the programs that are put into place, and the targets would be met if sufficient deployment of energy efficiency measures would enable those kilowatt hours to be saved at the 1% or 3% level. Some parties may interpret it, as I said, as a not-to-exceed consumption ceiling. Under this view, the absolute consumption in 2013 would need to be lower than that of 2010, or the base year. Okay? We believe that that interpretation is not consistent with the Act, nor with the intent of the specific language in the Act. First, as we've stated, the Act is clear that 1 and 3% targets are to be applied to the baseline year. Had the intent been a not-to-exceed target, we would have anticipated language such as the 2013 year should be 97% of the base year and shall not exceed that base year target in 2013. Secondly, a not-to-exceed concept would materially increase the goals as stated in the Act. 1% and 3% could be as much as twice as high given the native growth within our territory. So for those reasons, we believe that a reduced by interpretation is the correct interpretation on the consumption side. From a peak load standpoint, utilities have the requirement to reduce by a minimum of 4.5% of their annual system peak demand in the 100 hours of highest demand. For this target, PECO would intend to calculate the average peak demand over those 100 hours and apply the 4.5% reduction to arrive at a single demand target of which we would have to achieve during a peak reduction or a curtailment call. For PECO, that equates to approximately 350 megawatts. Under our view, the DSR measures would be implemented under a defined load, temperature, humidity, or pricing trigger points that would be approved by the Commission, but only called if those defined conditions in fact occur. In contrast, some parties may interpret the peak demand reduction as requiring a forward look, whereby an EDC would need to reduce each of the 100 hours of peak demand by 4.5%. This forward-looking approach would require precise predictions as to when those hours will occur. Curtailment under this scenario would take place even when not justified on the basis of actual load conditions, temperature, or the level of wholesale prices. PECO does not believe this predictive must-curtail approach would make sense operationally, economically, for participating customers, or that it's consistent with the intent of the Act. Now I'd like to turn my attention to...
You have 30 seconds.
Thank you. Measurement and verification. It's critical that the measurement and verification protocols be agreed upon prior to the plans being approved by the commission. The commission has a number of resources available to help define what those protocols are. The Model Energy Efficiency Program Impact Evaluation Guide is developed by the National Action Plan for Energy Efficiency, is one source. You have also, the PUC has also developed its own technical reference guide in respect to the AEPS legislation that defines standard energy efficiency measures. It'll be critical that both deemed savings and measured savings be part of the measurement and verification protocols. We urge you to utilize the best practices from a number of other states, such as New Jersey, New York, California, Vermont, to arrive at the protocols used here in Pennsylvania. Lastly, I'd like to encourage the commission to take a broad interpretation of what a conservation service provider is. The Act defines a conservation service provider as an entity that provides information and technical assistance. We believe that interpretation should be much broader to allow these curtailment service providers to provide a whole range of services to the utilities, such as program management, execution, measurement, and verification, to ensure that we bring their experience to the marketplace here in Pennsylvania. Thank you for the opportunity to present our views to you, and we look forward to working with you and all the stakeholders in the development of our plan.
Next, we will hear from Nancy Krajevic of Duquesne Light.
Good morning. My name is Nancy Krajevic. I am manager of commercial and industrial customer care at Duquesne Light, and I appreciate the invitation to be here. Duquesne has two major issues that I would like to highlight here that are unique to it. First, the legislation requires reductions in consumption and demand of retail customers. We are unique from other EDCs in that we have experienced some of the highest levels of shopping in the United States and certainly in Pennsylvania. In our control area, nearly half of the electric power consumed is sold by electric generation suppliers other than Duquesne. We believe that the reductions mandated by Act 129 should not be based on loads supplied by EGSs. While no EDC has ultimate control over the energy a customer consumes or demands, we believe that we will have less influence over a customer's consumption of a commodity that it purchases from another entity. The EGS has certain financial goals, including an inherent desire to increase its own sales. The EDC, on the other hand, has the countervailing incentive due to the new legislation. If the targeted reductions are to come from all retail customers, Duquesne will face a heightened challenge in achieving those targets. In Illinois, whose efficiency and conservation legislation language is very similar to Pennsylvania's Act 129, reductions in consumption and demand are required only from eligible retail customers or those who purchase their energy from the regulated EDC. Duquesne recommends that the same logic be applied in Pennsylvania. We recommend that the PUC clarify, similar to what is done in Illinois, that individual EDCs are responsible for their own generation supplied customers and not responsible for customers over whom they have little influence and no contractual generation relationship. However, if the Commission does not agree with that position and consequently applies the required reductions to all customers, including customers who purchase their energy from EGSs, then another critical, unique issue is raised for our company and for our customers. Act 129 limits the total cost the EDC plans up to 2% of the total annual revenue in 2006. In 2006, 46.5% of Duquesne's load was served by EGSs. No other Pennsylvania EDC had more than 4.5% load shopped at that time. In other words, the basis for our investment in energy efficiency and conservation plans has significantly less generation revenues than other PA EDCs due to the competitive shopping occurring in Duquesne services. service territory. At the very least, an upward adjustment is required to our 2006 retail generation revenues in order to provide the same level of investment in these programs for the customers in our territory as will occur for other customers across Pennsylvania. Failure to make an adjustment will penalize the success of the competitive market in Duquesne's territory. A second unique issue for Duquesne is the rate structure offered to commercial and industrial customers. Our default service offering for large C&I customers is a day-ahead hourly price service, a pricing mechanism that results in conservation and peak load reduction measures already because the customer can currently adjust its consumption based on the day-ahead price indicators if it is so inclined. It's important to note also that 91% of our large C&I customers shop energy supply contracts offered by EGSs to large C&I customers are typically based on a per kilowatt hour charge with no monthly demand charge. At the request of many parties and with Commission support, Duquesne eliminated its demand charges in both its large and medium-sized default service C&I rates, primarily as a stimulus to the competitive market and to make comparisons of price easier and more transparent. Because of both the default service rate structure and the typical EGS price offerings in our zone, there will be little current financial incentive for any of our C&I customers to shift or reduce demand. These issues that set Duquesne apart are a result of electric competition in Pennsylvania, but there is competition with other energy sources that will impact our energy efficiency plans also. The southwestern corner of our state has a high concentration of natural gas service. Of the over 500,000 residential customers in our territory, a mere 5% of them use electricity to heat their homes and water. That means there's precious little efficiency to be captured from our customer base for space and water heating. So while Duquesne supports and encourages the Commission to develop a structured framework in this process, we urge the Commission to simultaneously include enough flexibility to address the unique circumstances that exist among the various EDCs. In that way, we will all have the best opportunity to implement programs that will most effectively support the overall achievement of the goals of the legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we will have Doug Kroll from PPL Electric Utilities.
Thank you, Judge Salapa. Good morning. My name is Doug Kroll. I'm the Manager of Regulatory Strategy for PPL Electric Utilities Corporation. And on behalf of PPL Electric, I want to commend the Commission for initiating this hearing for the purpose of gathering information on alternative energy resources, energy conservation and efficiency, and demand-side response tools. This effort has, of course, taken on greater significance with the enactment of Act 129, and I want to further commend the Commission for setting aside an entire day for this hearing. Certainly quite an investment in all of our time. Act 129 is an important piece of legislation that addresses a number of issues that arise with the expiration of generation rate caps and the final steps in the Commonwealth's transition to a competitive retail electric market. PPL Electric was an active participant in the discussions leading up to the enactment of Act 129 and a supporter of House Bill 2200. In many ways, this legislation endorses strategies and activities that have already been put in place by PPL Electric for the benefit of its customers. Let me give you a brief synopsis. PPL Electric began the process of installing smart meters in 2002 with the installation of meters that can be read remotely. The company is in the process, to Acting Secretary Hanger's question, of enhancing the basic system to the point that today it serves as the backbone for time-of-use rate programs, hosts an energy analyzer that permits customers a better understanding of how they use electricity, and provides suggestions by which they can reduce their consumption, and provides all customers the opportunity to actually view their hourly usage on the web. In 2007, the company began procuring default generation supply for 2010 using laddered procurements of standard products through a bidding process utilizing standard agreements, all of which are concepts which are found in Act 129. Act 129 expands on these concepts in the company's recent Polar II filing for generation supply for the 2011 through 2013 period, we believe conforms to the requirements of the Act.
Also in 2007, the company filed and the commission approved a consumer education plan that will spend over $26 million over a five-year period, helping consumers to understand their electricity use and to use energy wisely. That plan includes education, pilot rate programs, and efficiency and conservation programs that are similar to the programs envisioned by Act 129. We have filed written comments, as noted earlier, to the October 20th secretarial letter and also to the October 29th letter and SEEP's questions. And I would be happy to answer any questions on any of those matters. But I want to take a moment here in the time that I have to focus on one issue or one area of issues that we feel is very important and foundational. And that's the same issues that Acting Secretary Hanger addressed. The issue of how targets will be set, the issue of how EDC plans will be defined, and how results will be measured. Any discussion of setting targets, defining plans, and measuring results must begin with an understanding of the energy efficiency, conservation, and demand-side reduction measures that will, in aggregate, form the plans that the companies will submit. PPL Electric anticipates that significant numbers of new programs will be needed to achieve the targets established by Act 129. The company is only beginning the analysis of programs it might propose in its plan, but anticipates that the plan will include things like direct load control programs, efficient appliance programs, distributed generation, and weatherization programs. The company will also consider the role of time of use programs and interruptible programs. It's important to consider that the Act establishes processes to analyze and evaluate individual measures, both at the time the plan is submitted for approval and as the measures are implemented. The company believes that it's important to recognize that for all the emphasis the Act places on smart meters, there is in fact no way to evaluate the effectiveness of individual measures or even plans that are the aggregation of measures based on meter reads. Consider, for example, a measure that involves residential customers installing compact fluorescent light bulbs, or what's known as CFLs. There are too many variables in residential electricity use to be able to see the effect of bulb replacements by reviewing meter reads that will also be affected by hot water use, appliances,
you have 30 seconds.
Changing the number of occupants, changing habits of those occupants, weather, and a host of other factors. Importantly, if a customer undertakes two or more measures, it will be impossible to separately measure the effect of each individual measure. As a consequence, PPL comes to the point that John Hanger has come to, that we need to focus on the four corners of the Act. We need to focus on the implementation measures that are going to be proposed in the plans. We need to have a coherent, verifiable measurement program to assure that the ratepayer money that's spent on these programs is achieving the benefits intended by Act 129. Thank you for the opportunity again, and at the appropriate time, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Next, we have Mr. John Pagani of the First Energy Companies.
Thank you, Judge. Good morning, Chairman. Is this on? Good morning, Chairman, Vice Chairman, and Commissioners. I'm John Pagani, Vice President, Energy Efficiency for First Energy, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you this morning on behalf of our operating companies in Pennsylvania, Metropolitan Edison Company, Pennsylvania Electric Company, and Pennsylvania Power Company. Act 129, as the chairman, it is not on?
To pull it closer, please.
Thank you. Act 129, in which the Pennsylvania legislature has addressed the complex energy efficiency and demand response issues with the intent of helping customers more efficiently manage their energy use compared to current energy consumption. We agree with the chairman that this is an opportunity for Pennsylvania, and it's a unique opportunity. It's one that's going to take a significant amount of support and coordination for us to be successful in the Act's mandates. We look forward to working with the Pennsylvania Public Utility Commission in our effort to achieve these aggressive energy efficiency and demand targets in a cost-effective manner, while maintaining the financial integrity of our electric utility operating companies. As I've indicated, these are very aggressive targets, and at the outset, we must recognize the significant challenges we face in meeting these targets. For example, the compliance date, as we've discussed, the first date on May 31st of 2011, is very ambitious, especially when you consider that the company's compliance plan likely will not be improved until the third or fourth quarter of 2009, leaving only 1.5 years to achieve the targets. Also, we know that true market price signals are essential to changing customers' usage habits and customer behavior. Yet these price signals will not be in effect for our two largest companies, MedEd and Penelec, until January 1st of 2011, which will leave only 5 months in which the targets must be achieved. With MedEd and Penelec customer use of electricity increasing more than 8% in the past 4 years alone, we know that price elasticity remains a major factor. A good example of this concept is really at the gas pump, where we saw that consumers' buying habits did not change dramatically until the price of gas nearly doubled to over $4 a gallon. While current economic and market conditions might provide some customer motivation to conserve, they also, in all likelihood, will be a limiting factor for the many customers as they consider the capital investments and the discretionary income that will be needed to achieve the desired energy efficiency improvements. Recognizing these targets are ambitious and that the compliance schedule and the difficult challenges we face, I'd like to focus on three key success factors that are critical to achieving the Commonwealth's goals for energy efficiency and conservation. First and foremost is the adoption by this Commission of a timely, flexible, and effective process to review and approve energy efficiency and conservation plans proposed by the EDCs, along with full and current cost recovery. Given that time is of the essence in achieving the initial targets, the process should avoid lengthy hearings and yet allow for meaningful public input. Prompt Commission action in approving proposed plans and any required compliance plan filings is necessary because the sooner the programs start, the more likely the targets will be achieved. The process needs to be flexible in allowing for prompt action on interim program adjustments, such as those that seek to change the program parameters or substitute programs when previously proved efforts aren't achieving the expected results. A second critical factor that I'd like to discuss is one that, and I do welcome the comments of Acting Secretary Hanger on this subject, is the need to coordinate utility programs with related energy efficiency programs that are currently being conducted and will be conducted by state agencies, such as the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection, the Department of Public Welfare, the Treasury Department, and the Department of Community and Economic Development.
30 seconds.
We must find a way to achieve synergies amongst these efforts so that we can realize the benefits by both the state programs as well as the utility programs in achieving these targets. As my third and final factor for success, and one that I really underscore as being significant for us to be successful, is consumer education. I know that that's been discussed. I know that that's a subject that will be necessary in order for us to attain meaningful and measurable shifts in consumer behavior, and more importantly, sustainable shift in consumer behavior. Over the years, our companies have actively supported education programs such as the online energy calculator and energy efficiency seminars for our business customers, hospitals, and schools that give customers the information they need to make better energy decisions. We believe that increased emphasis on a coordinated education component is an essential part of our future efforts to help customers better manage their electricity cost and usage. In closing, let me reiterate that First Energy is committed to working with the Commission in an attempt to meet the energy efficiency and conservation goals of Act 129 and working with our utility partners as well. Thanks again for the opportunity to speak on behalf of First Energy and its Pennsylvania operating companies.
We'll now take questions for panel two, starting with Vice Chairman Christie.
Well, thank you. I guess the first question, Nancy, welcome back. It's great to have you back here again. I Can't quite seem to get used to your new name, though. Even though you've had it for a number of years, I still refer to you as Nancy DeRamo.
That's okay. I'll answer to that, too.
Okay. But welcome back. It's great to have you here. I just had one question. As usual, Duquesne Light seems to stand out in some respects. And since you have so many customers shopping, if we were to apply the targets based upon the customers that you serve under default service, it would appear that that would be a fairly small number of customers that would be eligible to participate in this demand conservation program. Do you have any suggestions or solutions on how we can capture those other customers that might be shopping so that we could get the full intent of the legislation implemented?
Well, the load that shopped is 46.5%. The number of customers isn't quite that high. We have 91% of our large C&I customers, but the majority of our, small and medium-sized commercial customers still do take service from Duquesne Light, and about 20% of our residential customers shop right now. Certainly, any program that's put out into the marketplace for a residential customer, they will hear about it. They will probably be able to take advantage of it anyway. So I don't see as big of an issue with the residential customers. In terms of the large C&I customers, I think it's important to always work with them. Their usage and demand is going to be so individually motivated by their business circumstances that I think they're a more difficult group to reach, whether they're our customers or an EGS's, but certainly more so if they shop with someone else.
Thank you. I just had one more question for Frank. I noticed in your testimony that the target reduction would be 450 megawatts, I believe, in the year 2013. And my question is, do you have any concerns about your ability to meet that target when we have so many other entities that might be performing demand-side reduction programs on their own? PJM is contemplating a demand-side response program where projects can qualify for RPM credits, and I would imagine that many people will embark upon that program on their own. And it seems like you already have 118 megawatts that you've done on your own, but there's others doing about 159 megawatts. So do you have any concerns about your company's ability to meet this target if there's too much other competition taking away your demand-saving opportunities?
Excellent question. It would be our position that all of the resources within the PECO zone that's served by PJM would be able to count towards the demand reduction goal. In addition, as I mentioned in my comments earlier, it will be critical for all the utilities, in my belief, but I'll speak for PECO, to enlist the services of CSPs, and I will define a CSP this time as a curtailment service provider, in order to achieve that target. So I do think the competitive issues are there, but if we structure the programs appropriately and bring all resources to bear, I believe we can make those targets.
Okay. And just one other final comment. I wanted to thank PECO again for moving forward with the real-time pilot program that was presented to the Commission. And even though we rejected it, we didn't reject the concept. It's just as we've all discovered, there's a lot of details in that program that we need to perfect. So please don't get discouraged. We appreciate that effort that you put forward.
Thank you, and I assure you it will be coming back to you at a later date.
Commissioner Powelson?
Sooner rather than later, though, please. I'm going to ask the question, because you're in panel mode here, so whoever wants to take it. I think we're all encouraged by what's going to be taking place here in the next 5 years in the energy marketplace. I heard, Nancy, your statistic in your service territory, 91% of your C&I customers are shopping, 20% of your residentials are shopping. And here we are as a commission looking at the implementation of Act 129. And my question for you
And John, your point on consumer ed, which is a very important piece of this equation, but I want to throw this out, just food for thought. It seems to me, and it's a good thing, that we're going towards consumer-driven electricity here in the Pennsylvania marketplace. Would you guys agree with that? Or the end user is now making a conscious decision on how much electricity they're going to use and obviously how much they're going to conserve. I hope I didn't stumble the panel here.
No, I'll take the first shot at it. PPL absolutely agrees, and what that captures is really kind of our approach as we've approached the end of the transition to try to bring understanding, education, tools, the power of choice, and not just selecting an EGS, but also selecting conservation measures, efficient appliances, to customers, with the idea that they will make wiser use of the scarce resources that are available. And part of that is revealing price at the end of the expiration of the caps, so that that factors into the equation and conservation measures can merit their true value.
Commissioner, I agree with your comment and your thought. I just add, and I think it's critically important that we involve the consumer, and it's going to take a fair amount of time for the education to take effect and behavior to change. I think we can all look inside our own homes and consider our own behavior with respect to how we use energy, our thoughts about adding new appliances and adding new devices and the technology as it grows. So very important that we involve the consumer, very important we take this to the consumer and start to take some action and see some results. I think it's also important from a utility standpoint to look across the whole footprint of our company's operations to improve the efficiency from end to end. So for us, it's an all-in concept. Of course, critically important to get it to the consumer as well.
And Commissioner, we at PECO, we absolutely agree. And I think one of the points that we have got to reinforce is that of education and awareness. Because when consumers make a choice in terms of an appliance or something they're going to bring to their home, they live with that choice for a number of years afterwards. So it's important that they understand when they're making that purchase decision why they should be considering a higher efficiency appliance and hopefully make that decision to go with that higher efficiency option.
Nancy, any comments?
I would just echo those comments. I do think even the gas prices of this summer showed that once customers have to deal with price increases, they will change their behavior. Our rates have gone in many different directions over the last 8 years. As our CTCs expired, we had polar increases and a D increase. They've not been extreme, but we've introduced other, we have an adjustment clause in our medium CNI rate to tie the energy prices more to market, and that too will drive the consumers at least awareness that the price of energy does change from time to time, actually every day. So I agree.
One last question I have. With the deployment of smart meters, I'd like to consider it smart meters light because we're not going to have full deployment here. But your thoughts on the capturing of the data and the use of that data. Is that your data or is that to be shared with CSPs in the marketplace?
I can take the first shot at that. We believe that the meter data is the customer's data.
Okay.
And if the customer wishes to share it with CSPs, that they by all means have that capability to do so.
Yeah, on behalf of PPL, which has now lots and lots of data, having collected it now for about 18 months, we agree. This is the meters and the capability to store, retrieve, manipulate the data. It's all paid for through rates. So the customers need to have access to this benefit, and it is the customer's benefit. We have to respect the customer's need for confidentiality of that information. but we are working to try to find ways to work with EGSs to make that data more available, to use the existing EDI transactions perhaps to make data available that isn't normal billing data even.
Commissioner, I would agree with both Doug and Frank that that is customer information, customer data, and it should be protected with respect to the customer's wishes. I'd just add that it's important to recognize that it will be critical to ensure the security of that information as it's collected in whatever manner it is collected within the utility system.
And once again, I get to echo those comments. That's a fundamental premise. That is the customer's information, and it needs to be protected. But as in deregulation, certainly we will work with the EGSs, with the other entities that come into this market with commission direction to make the best of it information available to support the legislation. But it is fundamentally the customer's information.
Well, I want to thank you all for taking the time out of your hectic schedules to be here, and want to encourage you, your regulatory staff, to continue working with us on our implementation plan, because I do think we have a great opportunity here in the Commonwealth. So thank you for your leadership here today.
Commissioner Pittson-Grilly.
Thank you. A number of you and other commentators have recommended that the Commission adopt the California Total Resource Cost Test. Is that the best standard available? And if so, does it need substantially tweaked for use in Pennsylvania?
I'll take a first shot at that. I've looked at the Total Resource Manual. I don't know if it's the best. It is good, and it has good information. It's certainly not complete yet. I think there can be additions to it based on some new types of programs and new types of developments that occur. So it probably will need to be modified, but I think it's very good, at least from what I've seen at this point.
Go second this time. I would agree. We should, as much as possible, rely on things that have worked in other jurisdictions because of our tight time constraints. Duquesne doesn't have much experience in energy efficiency as opposed to some of the other EDCs, since we're not a generation company, but it is important to start with what works out there already.
I would agree with the other panelists. The California standard manual is a very good starting point. We probably need to take a look at it to see what modifications are required, but it gets us probably 80 or 90% of the way there.
On behalf of PPL, I certainly agree with those thoughts. We need to start someplace, and from my review, California seems like a good model. And I think we can work pretty well collaboratively through this effort, because we did work collaboratively through a similar effort that brought us a technical resource manual, or technical reference manual, under the Alternative Energy Portfolio Standards Working Group. And you get the right input and people focused on coming to a meaningful solution to hit the guidelines, and I think that's the best way to go about it. Start with California and move quickly.
Thanks. I think you also referenced Ontario in your comments. Did you work on...
Yes, I did. And, you know, in the panic of the act, you do a lot of web searching, and I wasn't seeking out Ontario, but they came up with a manual that looked pretty good to me and pretty well laid out. There are probably others that could be a good reference. I'd endorse starting with California, though, and then seeing if we can make it better or make it more applicable to Pennsylvania. That would be my biggest concern, that California's environment may be a little bit different, their shopping structure may be a little bit different, the wholesale market a little bit different. We need to make sure we capture any differences that we need to capture.
Thank you. I know our staff will be looking forward to working with each of you on that, since we're under such a short time frame. Thank you for being here.
Commissioner Gardner.
Thank you. In listening to the four testimonies, I'll have to be honest with you. I had a very emotional reaction to the testimony, and I just want to state that there is going to be very burdensome penalties for non-compliance to this act. But in hearing the comments after the testimony, I feel much better about what I'm hearing from the companies. So So I'll close with just saying that we will look forward to your good faith efforts in complying with the Act.
Chairman Cawley.
From previous meetings with conservation service providers, I know that they need access to the utilities meter in order to attach devices that will help them, with the customer's consent, to provide services which the utility does not provide or may not provide. So I want assurances that the utilities are going to cooperate in giving access to their meters to conservation service providers. Does anybody have a problem with that?
Duquesne Light does not. If we've engaged the services, certainly we want the programs to be successful, and that's an important part of the successful implementation and measurement of the programs.
PECO would concur.
And I would concur with that, Chairman.
At PPL, we've been working with people to provide what are termed meter pulses in order to do curtailment services in particular. And in fact, have recently waived the charge for doing that. One of the things that we'll be looking at in submitting our metering plan in August of next year, we'll be upgrading the meter population or appropriate parts of the meter population, perhaps, with ports to allow that to happen on an easier basis.
Let me ask Mr. Jurasco of PECO. I know that you and other utilities have handed out energy conservation savings kits that have CFL lamps and the like. When it comes time to determining whether such measures are effective, are you going to target the customers that have been given these kits and have been audited and what have you? Are you going to target those customers to see if the customers have actually used these kits?
I think what you're getting at, and if I'm not on the right track, please tell me, is measurement and verification. How do we plan to measure? I think the measurement and verification protocols that are developed need to be looked at measure by measure. Some energy efficiency programs utilize deemed savings or prescriptive savings, whereby you do a small sample of customers that participate and you extrapolate that to the entire base. Others are more custom, large CNI type applications where you'll go in and you'll put a meter on before and after and try and ascertain. So the type of measurement will really depend upon the program that you are intending to measure. In terms of our targeting, we would envision rolling out a series of programs that residential, small CNI, large customers could take advantage of. And because somebody may have purchased one or two of one of our energy kits that has a two or three CFLs, that doesn't mean there's still not room to expand their usage in terms of not just CFLs, but other energy efficiency components within their home. So it's going to be a long process from the time we start to develop the plan to getting to our targeting protocols for actual implementation. I hope that answered your question.
Chairman, I think you were asking a question about targeting and marketing various customer groups. We haven't really designed the plans yet, but I can tell you that on experience in other states that we operate in, looking at the different groups, what their acceptance rates are, and how we actually get information to them and whether or not they understand the information, that all needs to be factored into the various plans. And probably more importantly in the beginning, as we look across all the customer groups, from an overall cost-effectiveness standpoint of trying to achieve these targets in the most cost-effective manner, we need to analyze the programs as from that aspect so that we begin to introduce the more cost-effective programs initially so that we'd stay within our target areas and within the caps.
Nancy has put her finger on a real anomaly about this legislation. As originally introduced, it provided that this commission would choose program administrators who would design and administer these programs in the individual service territories of the utilities. And there were incentives for the utility if the goals were met. The legislature changed the law to provide that instead the utilities were going to be responsible for implementing the programs after design criteria developed by this commission, with penalties if you did not comply. Well, where's the anomaly? The anomaly is that the Electric Competition Act was designed to encourage you to shed your generation customers. Keep them for distribution, but for generation, you were to do everything possible, lower all the barriers so that customers would go to an electric generation supplier for the electricity, presumably at a lower price or an innovative product or a green product. So we want that to continue. When the electric generation suppliers come back for most of the other utilities, but for a utility like Duquesne, which sold its generation and has most of its large customers already shopping, 20% of its residential customers shopping, you're not going to have any control over the usage of these customers. I don't mean to suggest that simply because they go to another supplier and maybe receiving the service at a lower price that they're going to be rash and they're going to use more power than they would otherwise use. But Duquesne, Penn Power, I mean, they're in a situation where they're liable to be fined if they cannot achieve the reductions in usage, even though the customers aren't theirs anymore, at least the generation part. Nancy, is that the point that you were making?
The challenge to achieve those reductions, it's much greater, sir.
Yes.
Hold on a second.
The challenge for us to achieve those reductions, I believe, will be greater than in a service territory where there is less shopping. Yes.
Chairman, I would agree with that. At Penn Power, right now we have 90% of our industrial customers are shopping. I think it's about 20% of our commercial customers shopping and only about 5% of the residential. But as you look at your industrial base as being the most significant component of the kilowatt hours that may be achievable for the energy efficiency targets, it is going to make it a bigger challenge. So we're going to have to devote maybe different types of plans and programs in those areas versus the other two operating companies.
I think John hits the nail on the head that we're all going to be faced with shopping at some point, and at PPL we're going to encourage people to find their best deal and shop if they can. I think what that means is that with a $20 million penalty hanging over my head, I'm probably going to be more inclined to put in my plan programs that change the customer's load profile definitively and in ways that he can't override. So probably you're going to see programs with more water heater controls and air conditioner controls and things like that. And interestingly, for all the emphasis on smart meters and infrastructure behind them, probably less in the terms of time of use rates, which customers are free to ignore and or take a different deal if they go to a supplier. You're right, it does create an anomaly, and I agree with Nancy and John that it's going to be difficult to deal with, especially with the potential of penalties hanging over our heads, and it does influence the selection of plans and programs.
But if we're going to ask customers to make sacrifices in order to save money on their usage, part of their bill, wouldn't it also be helpful to educate them that if they reduce their demand, it's going to reduce the wholesale price as well? Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. There's a large educational component that goes beyond their individual usage and their individual bill to the broader issue of how interconnected electricity is priced and sold, and that there is a benefit for all by combined reduced demand. Tougher message to get across. People tend to think closer to where their wallet lies, but you're absolutely right. That's the broader societal message that we need to try to get out.
And if we're also going to be asking people to make sacrifices, I think people need to believe that their utility is sincere in these conservation programs, that you're not going to take measures that are going to achieve a 1% and then a 3% savings, but stop there. Do I have some assurance from you that you're going to go all out and not just try to achieve the minimums?
Chairman, let me answer that. At PECO, we are absolutely dedicated to not just achieving these targets, but going above and beyond. The magnitude of the programs that are required to reach the 3% are staggering. As I believe Secretary Hanger mentioned, very few utilities in the nation have achieved this level of reduction. So I would tell you that once these programs are out in the market, they're being promoted, customers are becoming more aware of them, the momentum is just going to continue, and we're going to keep that momentum going to drive as far as we can. We're not going to start and stop because of a 3% minimum target. We don't view it as a minimum. We view it as a minimum, not a maximum.
Chairman, I concur wholeheartedly with your comments. In fact, in my testimony, in my statement, I talked about sustainability as being a key factor, and I really believe it. As we talk about customer behavior, consumer behavior, and the education that's going to be important to help people change that behavior, you can't do that as a one-time shot. That has to be a sustainable kind of a behavioral change for us to achieve the results, to continue to make them cumulative types of effects and on an ongoing basis. Sustainability is critical. The education and the behavioral change is a component of that.
Well, let me ask the skeptic's question, and that is, why would you shoot yourself in the foot by encouraging conservation if your revenues are depending on usage? What is your answer to that? Why would you encourage people to save energy if it's going to hurt your bottom line?
Chairman, it may hurt the bottom line in the short run, but my answer would be twofold. One, it's the right thing to do. Secondly, this driving energy efficiency is something that only makes sense. We want our customers to utilize energy in the most efficient and effective way possible. We don't want them to be wasting energy because it is a precious resource that is important to everyone.
Mr. Chairman, we're coming to the end of a transition period defined by the 1996 legislation, but it's a transition that's going to extend well beyond in terms of customers and society understanding different ways to use electricity. The Act is a compromise, as Acting Secretary Hanger pointed out, and certainly utilities would have loved to have had a revenue decoupling mechanism in there that would eliminate that disincentive that you described. But we're heartened by the fact that we have a cost recovery mechanism for the programs and the expenses that we'll incur that's on a full and current basis. We have a mechanism for eventually recouping lost revenues in terms of a base rate increase when those base rate increases are appropriate. I think as a first step, this is probably not a bad deal, and I think it probably sends a decent set of incentives to customers, to utilities, to CSPs. But I don't think our work is done, and I think we still need to look at those kinds of issues and changes that this new paradigm might bring to the other aspects of regulation.
Chairman, I would add to that that I think we are in some cases beginning a fairly long journey that we probably don't know what this road's going to look like after we get out the next couple of years. And I think we have to move in a very careful fashion so that we maintain the integrity and the financial viability of our operating companies, our utilities, as well as meet our customers' needs and understand that conservation is going to be a part of that process as we go forward. And we need to do it in a manner where we recognize that there's going to apparently be a fairly significant cost to achieve these targets. How we get there and what we ultimately see in that cost factor will be important stepping stones as we decide to take the next steps down this road. We need to manage this very carefully so that we ensure the results meet our customers' needs as well as meeting the needs of our utility companies and keeping the state strong and moving in the right direction.
Chairman, I would just like to say that, as you mentioned, Duquesne does have pretty successful competition in our area, and you can certainly expect us to bring the same energy, no pun intended, to this new initiative. Yeah, there was a pun intended. I don't think that we looked at the 1% and the 3% and the five-year plan as a limited set. This is ongoing. This is a new business function for the company, and we're viewing it as a part of our future. So you can be assured that our energy and attention and focus will be to support these goals for the long term and for the good of the Commonwealth.
Well, thank you, Nancy. I particularly note that Duquesne is special because it sold its generation first. It must buy all of its generation from others. But Duquesne is proving that the Electric Competition Act design was wise, that it will work in the sense that the electric utility can be the wires company only and have the generation part come from others and have those customers served by other providers for the generation part of the bill and make sufficient profit on the distribution and transmission part of it. Frankly, what I worry about is the electric utility which does not want that to work in the sense that it wants to hang on to its customers for the generation part as well. I want this not only Electric Competition Act to work, and I think we have an obligation, as long as it's on the books, to make it work, but we've got to make this one work too. We've got to make this act work. Even though those customers are still, for the most part, except for Duquesne Light, are still going to be your customers for the generation part as well until the rate caps come off and until the competitors come back and try to lure them away, we are implementing this act, and the penalties are potentially there while the electrics, except for Duquesne primarily, while those customers are all under your care. And that's why we're going to be looking very carefully to see how diligently you go about implementing this act, because they still are under your care. They have not gone elsewhere and probably won't go elsewhere until after January 1st, 2011, when the rate caps come off for the last remaining customers in Pennsylvania. So I thank you for your insights, and we look forward to working with you as we implement this act.
We have reached the point in the agenda where there is a scheduled break. By my watch, it is 10:30. We will take a 15-minute break and reconvene at 10:45.